God, we thank you so much for this moment we have to gather together with our, celebrating the freedom we have to worship publicly. I think sometimes this is a space we can take for granted, a space where we can proclaim our faith out loud together, where we can read your word together, where we can study it together without fear of persecution, without having to hide, and we are so thankful for that. I pray that you would help us to make the most of these moments by being attentive to you, that our hearts would be open to what you would have for us, that our minds would not be distracted by the countless things we have going on in our lives, and that we would hear from your word, but not just hear from it, that we would be changed by it. So we ask that your spirit would work in this place, in this room. We know that you are here with us. It's a promise you gave us. We just ask, we admit that we are willing. We offer you our willing hearts this morning and ask that you would do something new in us. We ask all of this in Jesus' name, amen. The series was supposed to end today, the How Not to Ruin It, and some of you may be disappointed that it's not ending today because you're sick of us meddling in your relationships. Has this been frustrating to you to realize? It's been a little frustrating to me. When I came up with this series, I was like, man, this is going to be great. We're going to talk about our relationships and other people. And this whole series, we've been talking about ourselves and all the things like we need to fix or change in our relationships with others, all the direction that God gives us to like do some self-reflection and analysis of our own hearts and our own sinfulness and our own stubbornness and all the stuff, and then change to be more like him in our relationships. So maybe you're like, yeah, I'm tired of you meddling. Let's get on with it. Well, unfortunately for you, this sermon is because of my daughter, my oldest daughter. So we were on vacation 2 weeks ago, and I was on vacation with our family, and I was kind of like came into the situation late, and there was like all of this drama happening. Do you have drama? Anybody have drama? Some of you had drama on your way here. Some of you are getting text messages while you sit here, because it's someone else's drama that they're trying to drag you into. Drama seems like it's everywhere. It's a part of every family. It's a part of every working environment. It's a part of every school. It's a part of every sports team. Where people are, there will also be drama, because I think there's a part of us, maybe some of us more than others, there's a little part of us that maybe likes it. There's some drama going on with some people that are close to us, and I'm being careful to, I don't want to get myself in more trouble than I need to. And my wife was talking about this with my oldest daughter. She's 20. She's great. She's home for the summer. Really smart kid. And my daughter, my wife's telling her all about this drama that's going on that these people are trying to drag us into a little bit. My daughter looks at my wife and goes, "Not my circus, not my monkeys." I had never heard such a thing. Like, this younger generation is on it. We can learn a lot. I mean, I'm just like one generation ahead, but you know, whatever the youngest next to, I was amazed by this. It instantly changed the mood of the room. Everybody's like sitting there going, yeah, yeah, not my circus. And those aren't my monkeys. I'm sitting there as the mood changed and this freedom was felt from this drama that we were getting pulled into, almost as if we were all agreeing together as a family, like, We're not getting drug into that mess again. We're not playing their game again. We're not getting manipulated by that again. As we declare together, not my circus, not my drama. I thought, I gotta preach that. There's this thing about drama that's really attractive. It sucks people into it. The circus always wants another clown. Do you know people that love drama? People that love drama, sometimes the people that love drama the most go, like Andy from The Office in that one episode where he's like trying to keep his relationship with the new secretary a secret. He goes, I don't want drama. I hate drama. Sometimes the people that love drama the most are the loudest people to say, I don't want any drama. No drama here. I'm not going to do the drama thing. Meanwhile, they're stirring up all of the drama. People that love drama, they're in the middle of every story. They have an opinion about everything. They're fast to talk to you about other people before they ever talk to those people individually. They seem like they know everything about everybody. They're in tune with every whisper in every corner of your workplace. They know who's struggling with what and who thinks they're a loser because they're struggling with that thing. They know everything, and they're also really quick to add their opinions. Well, she kind of deserves it because fill in the blank. People love drama. I think sometimes we're drawn to it. It has like this addictive pull. Maybe it's because somehow we feel important if we know what's going on with everybody. Maybe it's because we feel a little powerful if we are in the center of the drama circle, offering our opinion and our way to fix it and pointing out to everybody else how they're wrong, but we are the right ones. And it can be addictive, the drama. Creating this need in our lives, making us feel like we're left out if we don't know what's going on with every single person on our street. Feeling like we're missing something if we don't have an end to every story that's going on in our school and all of the best stories especially. Feel like we're missing out or not important if we don't know what's going on. Drama has this like pull on us. And the circus always needs another clown. And the clown we're going to look at this morning, who is not the focus of this message, is this guy named Saul. Josh did a killer job last 2 weeks preaching. I had the awesome opportunity to watch those messages, and he crushed it, talking about marriage, such wisdom from such a young pup. And his jokes were hysterical. Shame on you for not laughing at them. And really what I'm saying is shame on you for not laughing at mine. But that would be too egotistical, so I'll shame you for not laughing at his jokes. They were fantastic. And then last week, it was all about having that conversation, saying what needs to be said. And in that message last week, he talked about this guy, Saul. And he talked about how when Jonathan, who is going to be the center of this message, confronted Saul with the truth, Saul chucked a spear at him. And I think the point was, when somebody approaches you with the truth, don't throw a spear at them, figuratively. I hope you're not walking around with spears. This guy, Saul, he's a king clown, literally. And as I look at the story arc of his life in Saul, by the way, I left my readers in my car, so there's like a 50-50 chance I'm going to ask one of you for a pair of 1.5s at some point this morning. Because I'm old, but I'm not that old. For Samuel 18 to 20, you get this like story arc, and we don't have time to read the whole thing, but can I break it down for you? David is sitting in the court of King Saul. David, who has been appointed to be the next king by Samuel, the same guy who appointed Saul. But in the meantime, he's waiting and he's serving and he's being faithful and he's just using his gifts. And he's doing it with a good attitude, which is more than I can say for me and probably more than I can say for you. When we're waiting for God to show up, usually the first thing that goes is our attitude. But not David. David is faithfully serving God, and in doing so, he is faithfully serving this crazy, lunatic king of the drama, Saul. Oh, he's serving him by playing a harp, a lyre, in the king's court to calm him down, to appease him, to set the mood, to create the vibe, all the good stuff. And David was spectacular at it. He's doing that, and then he's going out and fighting the Philistines, and then he's doing that, and he's got a lot of things going on, and he is being very successful in all of these things. And Saul is emotionally unstable. One minute he loves David, the next minute he wants to kill David. He's jealous. This is stuff that creeps out in the people who want to be the center of the drama. Emotionally unstable, he's jealous, he's explosive and temperamental, losing his cool quick, he's moody, changing his mood often to unsuspectingly fast. He's suspicious. He throws a spear at David trying to kill him. Then he cries about it. After he cries about throwing a spear at David, he repents for throwing a spear at David. And then he throws more spears. Like, this guy is exhausting. And it keeps spiraling worse and worse for Saul. Like, he's not like having this moment of revelation or conviction or guilt because of, you know, I just tried to murder a guy who I used to like. He's not having any of that. The drama just keeps exhausting him further and further and sinking him lower and lower. And that's what drama will do to you. It will exhaust you. It'll draw you in. It'll sink your ship. It'll put roots down into the chaos of other people's lives. It'll have you meddling deeper and deeper into stuff you should not have been meddling in. And eventually, it'll make you exhausting to everyone around you. Saul, man, he is exhausting. And he's like creating this atmosphere around him. You feel it? Like, that's affecting everybody in a negative way. Just pulling people into the chaos that he continues to create. We don't think about what drama is like when we're just telling stories. We're just gossiping about somebody. When we're just meddling in somebody else's business. When we're just trying to manipulate a relationship. When we're just catching a feel of importance or power by placing ourselves and our opinions where they don't belong. We don't see it, but we're creating chaos. And sometimes we're not the center of the drama. We're not Saul. We're just the people that get sucked into it. You have the chaos that just starts spinning around Saul. And you have a couple of characters here. You have Saul, you have everybody else in his court who seemingly is doing nothing. They're just trying to please Saul. They're just trying to play the game. They're just trying to get by. They're just trying to make sure they're okay. And then you have Saul's son, Jonathan, who steps into the story. And last week we learned Jonathan spoke truth. He spoke truth when it was hard. Jonathan also had every reason to join Saul in the drama that he was creating. Jonathan was heir to Saul's throne. It was his inheritance that was at stake. This kingdom of Saul's would become his kingdom. He had every reason to go along with the drama creating, chaos stirring, clown king Saul. He had every reason to tell his dad, "You're right, Dad. Whatever you say, Dad. Ooh, yeah, I heard what they said. Oh, man, your suspicions are probably right. all the different ways we peddle and facilitate the drama around us and the people that love drama. Becoming an enabler. He had every reason to. But we see Jonathan step into the chaos differently. It says in chapter 19 that Saul's telling Jonathan and all of his attendants to kill David, going on one of these rage rants. But Jonathan had taken a liking to David and warned him. And he steps into the situation and he's peacekeeping. He says, "My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out." It's a thread that you see popping up here. He is not trying to be a peacekeeper. He is trying to be a peacemaker. And there's a big difference. A peacekeeper gets sucked into the drama because a peacekeeper wants to say whatever they have to say to make everybody like each other. A peacekeeper will play games in their communication with other people so that, you know, the temperature of the room just comes down a little. I'm not going to speak truth. I'm going to tell you what you want to hear so that you're not more mad. I don't want you to be more mad at them, but I certainly don't want you to be more mad at me. What you'll see in Jonathan is a map not to be a peacekeeper, but to be a peacemaker. Jonathan, in verse 4, it says, "He spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, 'Let not the king do wrong.'" I'm like, ooh, I see how you feel. I probably feel the same way too if I were you, but maybe have you considered that you're not seeing the whole picture? You know, all the ways we kind of like gently try to meander these relationships when the chaos and the drama is spinning around. No, he goes, like, "Dad, you're going to do something wrong here. Let not the king do wrong to his servant. He has not wronged you. And what he has done has benefited you greatly. He is speaking truth into the chaos, into the drama. He's not doing it with anger. He's not doing it defensively. He is calmly speaking truth and bringing the temperature of the room down." He goes on, "He took his life into his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for Israel." Like, God's been doing this stuff, not David. And you were glad. Do you remember? You were glad about that. "Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason? Saul listened to Jonathan and took this oath: as surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death." So Jonathan told David this oath that his father had made. He tells the truth. He seeks peace. He's not joining in the emotional temperature of Saul. He's not peddling in guesses and stories and gossip. He is pointing out, "Dad, you're wrong. And I need you to see this. David has not wronged you." It's almost as if he's going like, maybe you're jealous because of all the success David has. But remember, God won those victories. And you are glad. Maybe not now, but you are glad that God used David in your kingdom to bring about God's will for your people. This peacemaker tells the truth, seeks peace, protects people who aren't in the conversation. You know how drama always takes shots? There's always somebody who's not in the room, who's not in the conversation, who's being spoken poorly about. It doesn't get better, though. For a time, maybe it did, but Saul's anger flares up again, and he wants to kill him again. And if you just go like one chapter over to chapter 20 and verse 30, like I would read all of these chapters. It's a fantastic read this afternoon when it starts pouring. Later today, read these chapters. But it says Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan because Jonathan is, again, standing on behalf of David, his friend. So Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse and rebellious woman." I told you he was the king clown. "Don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse?" Can't even say David's name. "To your own shame and to the shame of your mother who bore you." On one hand, he's saying, that woman, you're her fault. And on the other hand, he's saying, look what you're doing to your mother. It's like people who love drama will twist every fact to fit their story. It's her fault. Oh, no, no. How could you do that to her? The truth becomes irrelevant. It's just a tool to fill their narcissistic tendencies to make the story about them and to show that they are right. It's the way they twist a story to paint themselves in the best light and to manipulate you into serving their version of the truth that they want to tell. Don't fall for it. Don't get sucked into it. That's not what how God calls us to live in relationship with each other. We are not peddlers or sources of drama. We are peddlers and sources of truth and love. "As long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you or your kingdom will be established. Now send someone to bring him to me, for he must die." Jonathan tries again. "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" Jonathan asked his father, but Saul hurled his spear at him to kill him. That Jonathan knew that his father intended to kill David. This has escalated. People are catching strays. Drama creates chaos. Chaos always drags everyone down with it. Now, Jonathan, his own son, is getting spears thrown at him. It says this, and lest you be tempted to think this as a dramatic response, I think it's actually pretty biblical. Jonathan got up from the table in fierce anger. Notice that he does not sin in his anger. Notice that he doesn't say anything in his anger. He doesn't throw anything in his anger. He does not take this anger that is rightly felt. This righteous anger. He does not take this righteous anger and lash out, cause a scene, throw a spear back, try to stick a fork in his dad. He doesn't do any of that stuff. Any of the stuff that we would be tempted to do. Jonathan, he doesn't do that. He gets up, dismisses himself. On the second day of the feast, he did not eat not because he was being passive aggressive and going like, "Well, Dad, I'm not going to eat then, you know, or I'm not going to talk to her, you know, I'm not going to return this text." All that would do is just perpetuate drama. No, he's grieving at his father's shameful treatment of David. He is grieving the drama in the relationship. In the morning, Jonathan went out to the field for his meeting with David. He goes through this series of things that he had set up. And then Jonathan says, eventually, "Go in peace, for we have a sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord," saying, "The Lord is witness between you and me and between your descendants and my descendants forever." Then David left and Jonathan went back to town. even when it escalates. Jonathan is steady. He's faithful. He doesn't sin in his anger. He keeps telling the truth. He is loyal to the truth and loyal to the promises he made. He grieves the sin that he sees around him in these relationships. Instead of joining into the drama, he grieves the drama. And he is a peaceful peacemaker, though his attempts with his father have failed. He does not let Saul's chaos, he does not let the drama affect his character. And how quickly the drama around us affects our character. It has us saying things we didn't think we would say, doing things we didn't think we would do, lashing out in anger and frustration, manipulating others, gossiping, inserting our opinion into everything else. It so quickly affects our character. And here stands Jonathan, not affected. Their world is full of Sauls. And in a world full of Saul, be a Jonathan. And your homes, be a Jonathan. At your Thanksgiving meals, be a Jonathan. Here's five steps to becoming a peacemaker as the worship team comes out. I'm going to rip these off fast because I blew my time. You ready? Five ways to be a loving peacemaker like Jonathan. One, do your best to live at peace with everyone. Everyone. Do your best. That's from Romans 12, 18. I'm not making that up. That's a verse. Do your best. Read the whole verse later. Do your best to live at peace with everyone, as much as you can, as far as you can, as much as it depends on you, do your best to live at peace with that person everybody's talking bad about. Do your best to live at peace with that person you're frustrated, be it the person spinning the chaos, the person in the middle of the drama, the person talking trash about somebody else. Don't get caught up in it. Do your best. This has changed my life. Trying to apply this verse is one of the things God has used this year in my life to change my relationships. I have texted that, yo, to groups of people, yo, I'm trying to live at peace with everyone. I'm not playing this game. I'm not having this conversation. I'm not gonna talk bad about that person. Because I'm trying to live at peace with everyone. It'll change your relationships. Number two, be a peacemaker like Jonathan, not just a peacekeeper. In James 3, 17 to 18, the end of that verse, you're going to have to read it later. It says that those who sow in peace will reap righteousness. Don't you want righteousness in your relationships, in your homes, in your relation, in your marriage, in your relationships with your kids? Right standing with God, that's what righteousness means. Don't you want to be in right standing with God and how you treat your employees and how you treat your boss? Don't you want God to look at you and go, he is living righteously. He is in right standing with me and how he speaks to people on his street, how he treats his neighbors, how he talks. Be a peacemaker. It's not about avoiding confrontation. It's about lovingly speaking truth. Here's number three. Don't add wood. Proverbs 26:20. Without wood, a fire goes out. Without gossip, a quarrel dies down. Don't add wood to the drama. Here's the ways we add wood to the fire of drama. We gossip. We talk in triangles, never really talking to the person that should be talked to. Instead, we talk around them in triangles about the person. We take unnecessary sides in a relationship, even when we don't need, when we could stand on truth and stand, maybe that truth sets us in the middle, not taking a side. We tend to take sides. It's adding wood to the fire. We add wood to the fire by feeling like we have to add our opinion to everything. What about not adding our opinion to everything? What about adding God's truth to everything? We add wood to the fire by matching the emotional energy. Jonathan didn't match the emotional energy, the anger and the chaos of Saul. He also did not match the emotional energy of David, the worry and the fear of David. Jonathan stayed stable, calm, trusting God. Number four, move towards people and speak truth instead of avoid, dodge, and speak around people. There's a verse in Matthew, it says, Matthew 18:15, if your brother sins against you, go and point out their fault just between the two of you, not between everybody else, not on Facebook, not on Instagram, not with some passive aggressive story, just the two of you. And if he listens, you have won him over. It's number four. Number five, be the calmest person in the room. Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath. Listen, sometimes you'll do all this stuff. You'll try to be like Jonathan. You'll do everything right, and they will still demand the circus. Don't be a clown. Don't join into it. Be a peacemaker. Keep speaking truth. Keep speaking love. Don't enable it. Keep being the calm voice of wisdom. But sometimes even when you do that, people will not accept it. They'll still lash out. They'll still try to suck you into the drama. And then it's like Jesus said, like, if anyone will not welcome you, will not listen to you, shake the dust off your feet. You don't have to make it your circus. You can move on. You keep loving them. You keep speaking truth as they allow you to. You keep being faithful. You keep being a peacemaker. But you don't have to own their drama. You don't have to be in that circle anymore. God, would you help us today, this week, not to be people who get sucked into the drama. Help us to be different. Everybody is getting sucked into the drama all the time. Help us to be the different ones. Help us to be the wise ones. Help us to speak truth and love and peace, not to match the emotions of people that would want to pull us towards anger, not to match the emotions of people that want to pull us towards worry, but to just faithfully stand like Jonathan stood. Would you help us to be more like him? We ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen.